world.
It's your past first point guard and Trailblazers reporter, Mike Richmond. You are listening to another episode of Locked On Blazers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, available wherever you get podcasts and also on YouTube. Thanks for making the show your first listen. Every single weekday, coming at you Monday through Friday, make it a part of your daily routine. Make it your first listen. Tell your friends to do the same. It's Locked On Blazers, your team every day. In today's show, the Blazers host their fourth or third, depending on how you want to score it, pre-draft workout at their practice facility. We'll run through who was there and why it matters. Then I got my picks, my four favorites for them to target with the 23rd pick in the draft. If the Blazers keep that pick at number 23, I've got my eyes on four players that I like. Then to close the show, we'll talk a little about my draft, evolving draft philosophy as it pertains to the Blazers, holders of the third pick and the 23rd pick in the draft. That's what we'll do in today's show. Let's talk, because on Wednesday, May 30th, the Blazers held another pre-draft workout. They have now held three big group workouts and then the Thompson twins. And the group workouts have been pretty consistently the same thing, where they have been six players in the sort of range of like late first round, early second round to undrafted, but like nobody who's really in their sort of like first round range. This is for like a couple different reasons. One, these are probably the people that you have in grouped in similar tiers. So you want guys to come in here and say like, we have 22 people in this in tier seven or whatever it is. Let's see if we can narrow down this tier a little bit cleaner. Also, like, these are the folks who are on the circuit. These are the job interview folks. Like, this isn't like the top tier of prospects. These are fringe first rounders or even more so like guys are going to be drafted in the 40s, mid second rounders and beyond. These are the dudes who are on the NBA workout circuit. So these things kind of just align. Again, with these types of things, you can read into it as much as you'd like, or you can read into it none at all. If you want to, you can say like, okay, the Blazers really like these dudes and they worked them out. Or you could say, be a little more cynical and say, okay, who are these guys' agents and why are the Blazers doing them a favor by bringing them into their practice facility? But on Wednesday, May 31st, I think I said May 30th, on Wednesday, May 31st workout, the Blazers worked out six players. Kobe Brown, a 6'8 forward from Missouri. Sidy Sissoko, a 6'7 wing guard. Wing is probably the right position for him. Skinny 6'7 wing, who's playing in the G League Ignite. Trayce Jackson-Davis from Indiana, big man from Indiana. He's basically played center in college, probably power forward in the league. Miles Kelly, a 6'6 wing from Georgia Tech. Naquan Tomlin, a 6'10 big man from Kansas State. And Jalen Wilson, 6'7 forward from Kansas. I think the four big names to know are Kobe Brown from Missouri. He's 23, but he was a really good shooter at 6'8 in college, very productive player at Missouri. Sidy Sissoko, I think this is a draft name people are into. He's playing in the G League Ignite, which is like the incubator program in the G League that the NBA has set up for exactly this type of prospect. CD is I've seen him mocked as high as in the late 20s, like a first round pick, someone who could be in the Blazers range at 23, but as low as like in the late 40s, like in the back half of the draft. I think ESPN has him at 40 according to my notes, but he's an intriguing wing for sure. Trayce Jackson-Davis, like an All-American at IU, Dale Davis' son, Blazers legend, Jermaine O'Neal legend. He was really, really good in college. Really physical, really skilled. Just like he's 6'9", and he basically played center in college, and he doesn't score outside the paint really. But like skilled, smart, incredibly strong, like probably has a role as a backup in the league and has talent to be more than that. But there's not a big market for 6'8", 6'9", centers in the NBA these days if you're not super athletic and can shoot it a little bit. And then Jalen Wilson at Kansas was like the best player on the best team in college basketball for a little bit, or at least one of the best teams in college basketball. Those are the four big ones out of those six. Then with Miles Kelly and Naquan Tomlin. I think this is continuing that trend of like the Blazers sort of getting their doing their due diligence, right? Getting players that are in their sort of range into the gym to see them do stuff. I don't think there's a big reason to sort of read into these names. Like I said, you can if you want to. It's like, you know, if they end up drafting one of these guys, I have my little spreadsheet. I'll say, oh, well, he worked out with the Blazers on May 31st. I think you can. But in general, I think this is just sort of that time of year when you collect due diligence. And because the Blazers aren't, because top picks aren't going to go everywhere, like you just might not be able to get workouts in your gym with the absolute top picks for three, because players don't want to work out for, they don't want to fall. They don't want to work out for teams they would fall to. They only want to work out up. So they might not be able to get Brandon Miller and Scoot Henderson in the gym. I wouldn't be surprised if they do, but like I said on yesterday's show, my research suggests that those two haven't worked out for anyone just yet. So, when you're at the top of the draft, you can be picky and choosy. At 23, I think that typically I would assume at some point we'll see Blazers work out some folks in that range, but maybe they won't. Maybe they've already done some of that due diligence and maybe that pick is earmarked to be traded, so they're not going to waste their time anyways. But there is some value in just working out second rounders in-house, because when people, if I'm making a spreadsheet, you better believe NBA teams are also making that counterintelligence spreadsheet as well. Because if you work out guys at 14, 15, who are in that 14, 15, 16 range, and you have 23, it's like, oh, the Blazers really like these dudes. They really like these dudes, and they're not in the range to get them, but this is what they're interested in. So, I wouldn't say the Blazers love CJ Sissoko, but they might, and he's an intriguing pick, and they have the 43rd pick in the draft, and all of those guys who I named in this first one, in this workout, could be on the board and available at the NBA draft when they're on the clock at 43, and the Blazers are in a position where they gotta, if they're going to take a leap, some of the leap is predicated on nailing some picks that other teams don't nail. You got to nail 43. You need to find a contributor at 43. And if a contributor at 23, if you make those picks, it's going to be imperative for them to get where they want to go. Okay. In the second segment, I want to tell you about my four favorite prospects for the Blazers to target with the 23rd pick in the draft. They haven't been working out folks in this range. They might hear, as we're now 3 weeks away from the NBA draft as I'm recording this. They haven't worked out folks in their range publicly. They might do so, but I have narrowed down my four, and I'll talk with some draft experts next week. I'm lining up some interviews to get their opinions on what the Blazers can do at 23, etc. So let's talk about my four faves at 23 in the second segment. But first, let me tell you about FanDuel. Great time to get involved in FanDuel, because right now new customers can get a no-sweat first bet up to $2,500. That's $2,500. So make a fast break to FanDuel during the NBA Finals, which begin on Thursday, June 1st. That's $2,500. Back in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win with that no sweat first bet. There's no better place to bet all of your NBA Finals action than America's number one sportsbook. So visit fanduel.com/lockedon. Get that no sweat first bet up to $2,500. That's fanduel.com/lockedon. FanDuel, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. All right. I have scoured the draft boards, I've read draft profiles, I'm listening to the podcast out there. I am not a big college basketball person. I watch every Carolina game, some of them multiple times, but I don't seek out much more college basketball. I'm not poring over the tape. I'm someone who learns about the draft basically starting in May of that season, and I kind of make some personal preferences. I do not claim to be an expert on any of this stuff. I defer to the experts, and if all goes well, I will have many of them on the show here in the next couple of weeks. So people, really smart people that I've had on the past, bring them back, Christian Peake, Raphael Barlow, you know the names. We will chat all things draft. But before we do that, I have made some preferences. These are for everyone's purposes. These are just personal biases, right? I'm reading some names, reading some profiles, listening to some great podcasts, and I'm going deep to find people who do this professionally, their opinions, and then I'm just forming my own opinions. But I have formed my own personal biases with four players I think would be the best for my personal favorites for the Blazers to target at 23. The Blazers again, 3, 23, 42. They got picks, but 3 and 23 in the first round. Here are my favorite four prospects at 23. First is Chris Murray from Iowa. That is Keegan Murray's brother. And basically all the scouting says that he's a little bit worse than Keegan Murray, a very similar player, but a little worse than Keegan Murray and left-handed. Keegan Murray's good. Like, okay, you get 72% of Keegan Murray in Chris Murray, right? But he's a lefty. Fun. Give it to me. Like, you know, Keegan Murray I'm much more familiar with because I've seen him play a ton for the Kings this year. Like, he's not a super quick athlete. Not this like crazy lockdown defender by any means. Doesn't have a ton of moves to the basket, but has good craft, can really shoot it, good size, and just like knows how to play basketball. Just is like a smart basketball player. You know, in the same way that his Keegan was a little bit older, Chris a little bit older. It's like dudes who had to stay in college. But if Chris provides you what Keegan Murray did, where he was a starter and high level contributor on a team that finished third in the West, and I will say Keegan Murray struggled early in the playoffs and then kind of found his footing late in that Warriors series and was like a contributor in the playoffs as a rookie. Relatively rare. Like you're not always getting those big games from youngsters. If Chris Murray gives you that and about the same size, like athletic profile, maybe not as scoring as a variety of ways as Keegan did, at least from the reports that I've read, and like maybe even a worse athlete, but you know, size to play power forward in the league. Can shoot a little bit, can, if you give him straight line drives and don't have to do a million dribble moves, he can get it done. Good touch, good positional defender, even if he's not a vertical athlete or much of a lateral athlete. He's not going to blow by people. He's just going to be a guy who can who's got NBA size and can shoot. If he's, as the scouting reports have described him, if he's just a little bit worse of Keegan Murray and you can get him at 23, sign me up for Chris Murray. Sign me up. He's my first of my four favorites. The second one of my favorites, Jet Howard, 6'8" forward from Michigan, son of Jawan Howard, coach there at Michigan. Yeah, I've seen one whole game of Jet play against Carolina this year. I watched an entire 40-minute game, not just highlights, but I have watched a little bit of highlights in leading up to this episode. Dude is a bucket. They mostly use him as like a movement shooter. Like, he comes off screens. They run a lot of like college basketball double screens on the baseline, floppy action stuff. But he leverages being such a good shooter into getting into everything else he does. He's not like huge, but he's got the positional size at 6'8" to be 6'7", 6'8" to like be a wing in the league. He can really shoot it. And because he can shoot it, he scares people coming off of screens. And like I said, and he sets up his secondary stuff. And his secondary stuff, at least from this like YouTube scouting I've done, seems to be like gets himself into the paint for like nice pull-up moves. And he's got some floaters with both hands. He can get all the way to the rim. And again, he's just the sort of right size, right build for a high-level role player in the league. I believe the Ringer compared him to Desmond Bane. If you end up with Desmond Bane at 23, really, really, really good. I'm not sure he'll reach that ceiling, but like the right sort of physical size to play on the wing. No more small wings is like one of my goals for the Blazers. No more 6'5 small forwards. Stop, please stop. They might still do that this year, to be clear. There's a chance they come away on draft night with four guards, but we will complain about that at a future date. Four like guards who need to play if they end up with Scoot and still have Ant and Nutsuck. Are they really going to do this again? I have digressed. Jet Howard seems to me to be like a dude who can score at a bunch of different levels, has the right size, and is like looks like an NBA role player with his skill set. Really intriguing at 23. The next one for me is Max Lewis at Pepperdine. If you paid attention to the Locked On NBA mock draft, this is who I took with the 23rd pick when I was doing the mock draft. Dude scores at all three levels, 6'7", a little skinny, but 6'7", really good shooter. His catch and shoot numbers, according to Raphael Barlow of Clean the Glass, are wild. His uncontested three-point percentage is over 50%, is just an absolute knockdown. He finishes well around the rim. He finishes in transition. He's got moves to get open. Here's the problem. He doesn't do anything else but score. Scoring is the most valuable skill to have in the league. He has the physical profile to be a 3-and-D like defender type, right? Like 6'7" with length and athleticism. You can turn into a defensive player. I don't think he's that right now. And he just doesn't pass. Like he takes, I was watching highlights of him and even his made shots. Like I watched maybe like a 2.5-minute clip before the show, like moments before pressing record of Max Lewis, to get a sense of him. I'd read a bunch about him, but I hadn't really, and I'd maybe seen this similar length clip, but Even his makes are really hard. He takes a lot of really hard shots. Scouting reports I said is that he has bad shot selection. He has bad shot selection when they go in. So I can only imagine what the misses look like when I sort of, if I were to dive deeper into watching Pepperdine. But 6'7" and can really shoot it, and has like, and can score at all three levels. Sign me up. Can get himself to the rim on his own, can get out and score in transition, shoots really well on catch and shoot, shoots pull-up threes. Like, this is the modern wing in the NBA. If you can coax defense out of him, you can probably live without his playmaking. I do think there is a higher premium in general put on playmaking in the league, but that's the reason these guys are in that sort of, you know, back half of the first round. If they were like, could really shoot it and are really good playmakers, they would be in a different tier of sort of prospect. I agree that, like, in general, the league is trending towards you need more guys who can, if the ball swings to them, they make a decision. Like, they can make passes and make it happen. But if you don't have that in a perfect world, and at 23 you're not drafting in a perfect world, give me dudes who have the physical tools to be good defenders and can really score at a bunch of... can really shoot. That's going to be step one. Shooting is, to quote Phil Beckner, shooting is the separator. Like, you have to be able to shoot, stay on the court because you have to be guarded. And then to be able to leverage that shooting and to do more. And I think Murray and Howard and Lewis all do that. And then my final pick, my fourth favorite, and these aren't ranked at all. This guy might be my favorite of the potential, my potential targets at four are James Nnaji, a teenager who plays for Barcelona. Now, when you play in that high level of Europe and you are a teen, you just don't play much. So the dude is limited. He gets limited minutes on, you know, one of the best teams outside of the NBA in the world. But like, built like a truck, huge shoulders, really good athlete, rim runner, you know, profiles as a defender, shot blocker, rim runner, maybe no range outside of the paint, but like, set a screen, roll to the rim, crash the glass, block shots, long arms, athletic with long arms, and can, you know, control the glass on both ends. Sign me up. The highlights are tantalizing for James Nnaji. He's a teenager. Like, he's a youngster. I think he'll be 19 when the season starts, right? So like, when you draft a 19-year-old and at the 23rd pick in the draft, you're really not expecting them to be contributors in year one, right? Like, it's just like, it's the reality of it. But the physical tools, the sort of the pedigree of playing in the really, the, you know, the second highest level, probably the best league outside of Spanish league, probably the best league outside of the NBA in the world, like the second best league in the world, you know, playing as a teenager with the physical tools he has, James Nnaji is really intriguing to me. Really intriguing to me. Probably my favorite of these four. Those are my four. Those are my four targets. I will I'll get people who do this professionally on the show next week, and I will ask them about these folks and other targets at 23. Like I said at the top of this, I don't claim to be an expert, but I do claim to be someone with opinions, and those are the opinions I've formed. I like Chris Murray, I like Jed Howard, I like Max Lewis, and I like James Nnaji. Okay, I want to tell you about an evolving opinion I have. My stance on how teams should approach the NBA draft has changed probably 180 degrees. Some would maybe argue 360 degrees, and I've come all the way back full circle over the last three seasons. And I think the Blazers having picks at 3 and 23 help kind of illustrate that, my evolving opinions and sort of my theory on how teams should approach the draft. That's what I want to talk about to close the show. Join me in the third segment, won't you? Still a pass first point guard. Still Mike Richmond. You are still listening to Locked On Blazers. There are two schools of thought, and obviously they mesh and are somewhat aligned. When it comes to the draft, though, there are two schools of thought. Best player available and drafting for fit. BPA or fit. This is sort of the debate in some draft circles on how you should approach it. And with everything in this world, Both is the way you should approach it, right? Like you should take, you should, you should take all of the data you can and synthesize it to make good decisions and not have a one track, I believe in this. But I will say that my theory on this has evolved over the last couple of years. So I was pretty staunchly in my younger days, not much younger, a couple years ago, very staunchly best player available. You just draft, like you make your, if you're draft, like NBA teams, you make your tiers list. If a guy falls to you who is in a tier way above everyone else, you just take him and you don't worry about the fit, because all you want, like the NBA is a talent league. You want talent on your team to either trade or develop or all those things. Just get the best talent imaginable and go for it. And that was my theory at all times. Make your list. That's why you build your tiers. It's why you build, you know, maybe not a straight ranking, but like a, you know, tier one, tier two, tier three. You make your tiers and you draft out of those tiers and you follow the plan. And that way there's less, you don't get the angst of decision-making, right? Or the decision-making fatigue. You have the decision in front of you. It's, you always make it. That was my long-held belief was best player available. Then, you know, talking to people who, you know, the fun part about working for Locked On is that the network has a bunch of people who do draft stuff professionally, and talking to them, you know, some of them believe pretty strongly in fit, right? Like that if you draft a guy who's the best player available, but he doesn't have a spot to play on your roster, he can't be the best version of himself. So you haven't drafted the best player available. You've drafted someone else because he's stuck in a logjam, stuck behind a veteran, stuck behind, you know, the guy you drafted last year, et cetera, right? So then it's like, okay, well, fit and best player available have to mesh. And then, you know, there are times, like even the 2012 draft with Damian Lillard, like the Blazers had a massive hole point guard. Fit and best player available aligning perfectly mattered. But sometimes, like, hey, you need a big, like the Blazers need a big. So they have to, in the second round, target a big because the fit matters, because like the roster construction matters. It would be irresponsible to build a team with only two players taller than 6'9", wouldn't it? Especially if you're the best player in franchise history, having the best season of his career, that might be irresponsible, right? Maybe. Hard to say. But I think fit matters. But I think my thinking, like fit matters for the roster decisions to some extent. And I think I kind of lean to saying like, hey, you can't be the best player available if you don't fit. So I'm leaning, maybe I'm a fit guy now. Maybe I'm a fit guy, right? And I think this debate is an interesting one. It's not even really a debate. It's more of like how you like to sort of think about making draft decisions. But I think I have changed my view to be a more stratified view of when I apply what theory. And let me tell you this, at three, in the top half of the draft, maybe in the top, like top 10 picks, call it the top 10 picks. I was going to say top five, but that might be too narrow. Well, it's like top 10 picks. You draft the best player available, period. If Scoot Henderson is on the board at three for the Blazers, they should draft Scoot Henderson. Yeah, they will end up with what I joked about in the second segment is Damian Lillard, Anthony Simons, Shaden Sharp, and Scoot Henderson. They'll have to oops all guards again. If they run another oops all guards roster, well, we'll just have a lot of fun making fun of them on this particular program, but please don't run the oops all guards roster. But like Scoot is too good to pass up if he's at three. Everyone says it's a generational point guard type. Not everyone. Many in the draft worlds think that Scoot is a generational multi-time all-star point guard type. If he's on the board at three, just take him. Just take him. Just take him. Best player available matters in that top five, top 10 range in the draft. Fit matters more as you get deeper. And here's why my thinking on that has evolved. At the top half of the draft, you are drafting for potential stars, right? All multi-all-star guys, all NBA guys, folks who are going to compete to be on all NBA teams and to win postseason awards. The regular season awards handed out in the postseason, to be clear. But you are drafting for that upside early in the draft. As you get deeper in the draft, for the most part, the ceiling on guys is like, I hope this dude is an NBA player. I hope this, like, I hope Chris Murray can carve out a long-term space as an NBA player. Like I hope he's a role player in the league for a long time. I hope Jet Howard can figure out how to be like his father was and play 20 seasons in the league. And Juwan Howard was absolutely a star, but the back half of his career is a role player. And that's why he played for played for another decade in the league after his skills diminished, right? Like, or he age happened. I think even like guys like Max Lewis and James Nagy that I mentioned, like Nagy has upside beyond that. But even then at 23 and in that sort of like 15 and to the end of the first round range, you are drafting, like, fit matters more because you're hoping that their ceiling is a role player. So you are envisioning, what role do they have on this roster? Because they're very unlikely to be like superstar level or star level where it's like, well, talent wins out. We're going to figure out how to use this guy. It's like, we're hoping they can find a little niche in the league, find a little niche on our roster and stick there and be a long-term contributor. So fit matters. So I'm best player available in your top 10. I'm fit for, 11. I don't know if there's like a hard line, but 11 through the end of the first round. And then as you get to the back half of the second round, like, I don't know if 43 is the cutoff for me for the Blazers, but the back half, I think you can switch to upside again. I think you can switch to best player available because the like bell curve of likely outcomes in the second round, the chances that you find a player that plays in the NBA is relatively rare. Like, just an NBA player period in the second round is relatively rare. So switching back to best player available and drafting for what you think as opposed to fit on your roster or sort of likely outcomes, just like, hey, we think if this dude hits, it'll work. Let's go best player available because of the chances that we get this right. It's basically a dart throw this deep into the draft. Let's see if we can make it happen. That is my evolving take. Fit or best player available, fit, best player available. It is the bell curve of my logic with how to approach the draft. Early you go best. Then you think of when you're drafting in that role player range, you think of how role players fit on your roster. Then when you get to the back half, you think about best player available and just magic of upside again. When you're in the back half of the draft. That's my evolving thoughts on how I would approach the NBA draft and how, you know, I will at least consider with whatever the Blazers do, I will sort of consider my personal approach. Okay, programming note. I'm going on vacation. I know I say at the top of the show, your team every day, and I feel a little guilty about saying it today. Coming at you every single weekday. It's not going to be coming at you for a couple weekdays. I am going to be out of town, away from the podcast. So no, there's going to be no Friday show, no Monday show, no Tuesday show. There will be a Wednesday show when I return. That is next week when I'm back. So we're gonna have three shows that I am not around for. But look for the podcast June 7th coming back. If some big stuff happens, I'll find a way to do something. I'm going to be out of pocket for a little bit, but I'll find a way. If something big happens, I'll find a way. But otherwise, I'm going to be out of the fray a little bit for a week before we hop back in and get into draft stuff and all of those things. So if you're wondering where the podcast is, that's where it went. You know, tell your friends when they're like, hey, what happened to Mike? Because I do a lot of these every day. I'm on vacation for a little bit. The family is traveling. So I'll be back. Hang with me. Come back for that show next week. I appreciate you listening. I'll talk to you soon.